welcome to this edition of Club Talk, the new club's fortnightly podcast. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Air Marshal Sir Robert Wright, or just Rob, as we all know him. You may have read in earlier editions of the New Club Times about how Rob and Maggie found themselves living in Cheltenham and how soon after they became members of the club. In this edition of Club Talk, we'll look back at Rob's earlier life and his rise from new recruit to top of the RAF ladder. So Rob, welcome to Club Talk. So let's just start at the beginning. Did you grow up in a military family?
Thank you, Mary, and good morning. No, not really. My father was in the Royal Navy during the war, but we were not a military family at all. But I was simply, like a lot of young boys, an aviation buff from a very early age, about the age of seven, madly making Airfix models and hanging them from my bedroom ceiling, getting chastised by my mother for destroying her mahogany dining room table with glue. I live in Kent, quite close to Westmorling Airfield, which was an RAF fighter base. So I suppose that triggered my thought process. And I now joined the Combined Cadet Force at Maidstone Grammar School. And that really set me off on that path of wanting to be a member of the RAF and in particular to fly.
Okay, so that really is what inspired you in the first place. But let's talk about some of those early days. You were in the RAF for 40 years, so how did things change for you in the RAF?
Well, I just go back one step. Perhaps in response to the earlier question, I went to Biggin Hill at the age of 11 and to Farnborough at the same age, same year, and watched the then Black Arrows, which was the RAF's aerobatic team, flying Hunters, loop 22 aeroplanes. It's still the world record for aeroplanes looping in formation. And when I saw that, I remember saying to myself, that's what I want to do. I want to fly Hunters in the RAF. And 10 years later, I was flying Hunters in the Middle East on number 8 squadron, my first tour. So 10 years from that seminal moment for me to actually achieving that first ambition. Early days of the RAF, well, as you say, I was in the RAF for 40 years, which seems like a lifetime for most people. And I'm often asked, how could you do one job for 40 years?
Well, yes, I'm sure you're asked that from time to time.
Well, I'll come on to that. But in terms of life in the RAF in 40 years, you know, what changed? Well, from an Air Force of 150,000 when I first joined, it's now 32,000. And people, I think, the population don't perhaps understand how much has changed in our military over the period we're talking about, four decades. But when I joined, there were Far East bases, as you heard from Peter Chadwick talking the other day, Middle East bases where I first served, Germany, where I spent 10 years. We had a huge air force in Germany. And so all over the world, the RAF was based, Cyprus and so on, and the Pacific route out through Mazira and Gan. That's all changed. So we're now very much a home-based force, but of course still deploying a great deal. And the statistic I use to illustrate this great change is that in Gulf War I, we had 37 ground attack fighter squadrons. That's the business I was in. And today that we only have 7. All the aircraft are much more capable today, of course, but one aircraft can only be in one place at one time, which gives you a measure of what our global capability is. As to one job in 40 years, I'm often asked about that, but reality is I had 3 careers, I suppose. There was the flying side and operations, several staff tours where you engage, as we all find out, in your later years into other work supporting the Air Force. And in my later years, I joined the political military world in Brussels. What does that mean? Well, it does mean about 15 different jobs. It meant 34 moves. And I suppose it's important to emphasize the roles that our family play in all of this, because without our wives who pick up the bits as you move, sometimes, as I've done 2 or 3 times, a phone call on Friday means I move on the Monday and the family follow on. But in terms of my flying world, it meant seven different types of aircraft, which was always a great fascination for me. Seven squadrons, 20 years as a fighter pilot weapons instructor, 3,500 hours. And an interesting statistic for your listeners, new club members, is 4,000 takeoffs and 3,999 landings. And there is a story
Please tell that story.
Well, very typical, really, in terms of this, you're here today and gone tomorrow. I was sitting in Bruggen waiting to take my squadron, number 9 squadron, Tornadoes, to Goose Bay. And I had a phone call from the chief of the air staff's office, that's the top man in the RAF, to say, would I please come across and be interviewed? Probably a diplomatic mistake, but I said, well, I can't because I'm deploying to Goose Bay in Canada tomorrow. There was a long pause, and then the voice said, yes, I understand that you're busy, but would you please come across this afternoon for an interview, which means get yourself here quickly. So I took an aeroplane across to Abingdon, went for the interview, was picked up, taken into London, interviewed successfully, as it turned out, drove back, was driven back, got in my Tornado at 7:41 that evening to fly back, planning to go to Goose Bay the following day. I took off and at 7:42 and at 7:42 and a half in the evening, nighttime, rotten weather, I ejected my navigator and myself because I'd hit 150 black-headed gulls that were roosting on the runway, which hadn't been spotted. And as soon as I took off, I hit them, took out both engines. And I always say to people that if you've got a two-engine aeroplane and both of them fail, you're not going anywhere. We ejected, and on Monday, when I was in Horton Hospital, RAF Horton Hospital, no longer an RAF hospital, I had a phone call from the chief who said, I saw the extent you went to get out of the job and you start next month.
Wow. Wow, that's quite a story, and it's one I'm sure that you've been asked to repeat many times. Quite extraordinary. But after all that flying, you also had a number of jobs on the ground. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
We all do this after we've had our 20-odd years of professional flying. We move into different arenas. I've had a lot of jobs on the ground. I was chairman of the directing staff at Staff College. One of my eminent students was a squadron leader, Peter Chadwick, PSO to the chief I just talked about. I've travelled on pretty much every continent in the world with him. I've worked as Air Commodore Operations at High Wycombe Strike Command. I've seen the Pole Mill in Brussels. I was the military assistant to the High Representative in Sarajevo in Bosnia-Herzegovina, implementing civil aviation, and I've had 6 years in Brussels, finishing up as the mill rep, NATO and the EU. So you can see how the various jobs have come into that 40 years, hence my point about it isn't one job.
Yeah, exactly. Rob, in 2003, you were knighted for your services to the RAF, and you've had a very successful career, a remarkable career. But it wasn't all work. I suspect you had a great love of winter sports and athletics. And I understand you still enjoy skiing to this day, not to mention something about snooker and the new club.
Well, yes, I love skiing and tennis, athletics. Nowadays, it's golf and tennis. Snooker, yes, I'm privileged to currently, although we're in lockdown, hold these snooker club, new club snooker championship, although it took a while to beat Neil Parrock, who is probably the best player in the club. Now, I love sport, and through my various contacts with those ex-president roles, I've been able to continue my interest in all of that. The point I want to make, perhaps, is traveling the world, which I'm sure you'll be interested in, is that my daughter was born in America when I had a 3-year exchange tour with the US Navy flying off carriers. My son now lives in Switzerland. He's a Swiss citizen working for Nestle. My daughter had 4 years in New York, so we went to visit her every year, 3 times a year. So travel has still been a great part of our life, and it's perhaps what adds the colour to all those years spent abroad.
Yeah, because actually you lived overseas really some 20 years. And I think I heard, maybe I read in the New Club Times, that you moved home 34 times, which is extraordinary. Perhaps not extraordinary for people who've been in the military, but for those of us who haven't, but have moved homes in a kind of regular way. So that sounds like a lot of physical moves, making friends, school for the children. How did you and Maggie get used to all of that?
It's a very important part of our military life, you know, because if you go somewhere for a couple of years, you have to make friends very quickly. Otherwise, you end up quite isolated. The RAF military families enable that atmosphere to develop. But you become very adept at making friends quickly and linking into new worlds and keeping a lot of those friends. And this is why, if I can put a plug in for the new club, for us coming to Cheltenham, finally, although we'd owned the house for a long time, we hadn't lived in it. When I was invited to join the new club, I saw immediately that there was another means by which you can make new friends in a new community. And it's been a great anchor point for us in terms of our retirement life.
Yes, I agree. Many of the members would agree in the same way. Is there anything more that you want to achieve in your life, Rob? You may have itchy feet for travel, although you've mentioned the amount of travel you've done since you retired from the military. But is there anything more you're looking to achieve?
Well, I still keep my feet in the military world. I'm a vice president of combat stress, and I have a lot of military links, as most of us do, that I go in and attend occasionally, catch up lunches and so on. Traveling the world, I've done as much traveling as I really want to do. The important thing for us now is to maintain contact with the family. My daughter, as I mentioned earlier, is in Greenwich. My son's in Switzerland. We spend a lot of time with our three grandkids now. When COVID allows, we will return to that. So I think all in all, in terms of ambition, I'm just set on enjoying my friends and my retirement life while still keeping active with various local activities. I'm the chairman of the Friends of Montpellier Gardens that I'm overlooking here. All these little things enable you to put back, to some extent, back into the world in which we live.
Thank you very much indeed, Sir Rob Wright. Thank you so much for sharing some highlights of your life. And we look forward to seeing you and Maggie back in the new club once we can all go back to our normal lives. But before you go, I must ask you to choose a piece of music that has a special meaning to you.
When I left High Wycombe, the job I mentioned when I was Air Combat Operations, at my last formal briefing to the assembled staff, they played a video of those 22 hunters looping at Farnborough. And they played it with music as a background. They played Sarah Brightman's Time to Say Goodbye. The music I've chosen is not by Sarah Brightman. It is Time to Say Goodbye, but sung by Catherine Jenkins at the Royal Albert Hall. She's been a fantastic supporter of the military family. I've met her a few times. And in practical terms, she's taken over from dear Vera Lynn in her association and her support of the armed forces and our veterans. So it's Catherine Jenkins, Time to Say Goodbye.
Quando sono solo sogno l'orizzonte, mancano le parole. Sì, lo so che non c'è luce in una stanza quando manca il sole. Se non ci sei tu con me, su le finestre mostrai tutto il mio cuore che hai acceso, chiudi dentro me. La luce che ho incontrato per strada, tanto so che sei con me, una luna tu sei qui con me, io sole tu sei qui con me.